Welcome to Take a Deep Breath. Today's podcast guest is Brian Goll, and he is the co-founder of redlightrising.co.uk. What is Red Light Rising? Well, it is all to do with light and light therapy. And these are not his glasses. You've seen these ones before. These are my cheap red light glasses, and these block out the blue and green light, so they're fantastic for night. So I've been quite interested in light sources and light pollution for a while now, and I feel that it fits in quite nicely with breath work, because when we think about breath work, we think about getting optimal sleep. Well, actually, if we're not breathing correctly, then our sleep's impacted. But actually, if we're getting ourselves flooded with the wrong kinds of light, that too is impacting our sleep. So our rest isn't correct, which then affects the foundation of all of our health. So it is quite nicely interweaved with all the things that we tend to talk about on this podcast. So Brian's got a great story, and he said something which has really stuck with me. He said, "I've moved to the Southern Hemisphere for my health." And you hear people say, "I've gone vegan, I've gone dairy-free, whatever, you know, fill in the blank for my health." But I've never heard somebody say they've gone to the Southern Hemisphere before for their health. So it's really interesting. And they basically sell these red light stacks, I think it's near infrared stacks, and he'll go through the science in the podcast, but essentially it gives us this light, this red light, which has the ability to heal our cells at a cellular level. I'm butchering the science. He's going to go into it now, and he's going to talk. We talked about so many things. For example, did you know that even if you're getting sunlight through your double glazing, the double glazing is blocking out all the good stuff that we actually need? So really interesting podcast, this one, and I would want to talk to this guy for hours. So I hope you get as much value as I did out of this. Couple of messages before we get stuck into the podcast. If it's your first time here, please like, subscribe and share. My name's Mike. I'm the host of Take a Deep Breath. We've got over 100 videos here dedicated to breathing exercises, breath work, and we have Breathcast, which is our dedicated podcast where we get the world's top breathing experts on to come and talk to us about breathing. And we're expanding now into other things such as light therapies and all of the great stuff like that. So essentially, it all comes down to wellness and how we can feel better, live better lives, be more fulfilled, and, you know, just generally have that vitality that we should all have. The other thing I was just going to ask is, if you can, the link is below for Instagram. So if you could follow us on there, that would be incredible. And the very last thing is, if you're listening to this and you're on iTunes or somewhere like that, and you could give us a 5-star review or whatever review you want to give us, that would also be great, because all these things, they spread the message and grow this breathwork community. And I really, really appreciate that. So thank you so much. Anyway, let us get stuck into the podcast. Here's Brian. Cheers. All right, good morning, Brian. How are you doing today, sir?
Not so bad, Mike. How are you, brother?
Yeah, very good. Thank you for coming on, and I'm glad we got to arrange this. I'm really excited to talk with you about light, red light, different light therapies, all that sort of stuff, because it's a subject I know a little bit about, but who better to hear from than yourself? So do you want to just tell us just a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, sure. My name is Brian Goll, and I am one of the co-founders of Red Light Rising, a premium red light therapy device manufacturer. And I've been into the health and wellness game for a very, very long time, you know, depending on how I look at it, probably from mid-teens, I started being very interested in health. You know, I was just kind of working out in the gym at that point and having protein shakes and creatine and all that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as the years went on, I just kept reading more, and then the internet came out, and then YouTube videos, and then audio books, and just kept reading and learning, you know, for my own passion, really. And then I think as a lot of your listeners and a lot of my community will agree, is that once we get sick and once our bodies stop working properly, then we start looking around and going, well, what's going on? Like, what can I do to get better? So the same thing happened to me. I kind of got very sick in my early to mid-20s because of certain diet changes I made, which weren't working for me, and that caused some serious health issues. Mm. And that led me to the low-carb, high-fat diet, which led me to the Bulletproof Diet by Dave Asprey. And then Dave Asprey's work led me to biohacking, and biohacking led me to red light therapy. And here we are today, where I get to use red light therapy every single day of my life. And I also get to talk about it and sell it, because it's it's a therapy that has been so beneficial to me and my business partner, and very happy that we get to share it with people like yourselves.
Yeah, very cool. Would you mind just flicking the light back on for a second that you just had on before we hit the record, just to show people? Look at that. That's incredible.
Yeah. I'm not sure how it looks on the camera, but this is obviously a red and infrared light therapy device.
Yeah.
One of them, one kind of them, should I say. And it's something I use. So it's now 10 a.m. in South Africa where I am, but I usually use the light at around 7 a.m. I get the red light therapy, and then I'll go straight outside and get some actual sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of one of the best ways to use it is sunrise and sunset.
Very cool. Oh, I've got so much I need to ask you. I'm going to have to really get stuck into this now. Okay, that's awesome. So you went through some dietary changes, then you discovered Bulletproof and Dave Asprey, and then you got into that. Okay, now that makes sense. And so what are the biggest benefits of red light therapy?
So red light therapy, you know, that's quite it's a loaded question, because the reason why I say it's a loaded question is because all day I get emails from people saying, is red light therapy good for eyes? Is it good for skin? Is it good for muscle recovery? Is it good for bone healing? Is it good for injury healing? Is it good for brain performance? And the answer is always yes. And the reason that the answer is, and that's where it sounds weird. It sounds suspicious. It's like one of those, oh yeah, okay, so this can help everything, can it? And it sounds a bit weird, but it's very important to understand how and why red and infrared light therapy works, first of all, before you can then appreciate how it makes everything else better. So the way red light, when we say, let me backtrack a couple of steps there. When we say red light therapy, we're talking about red and near infrared light. These are two different wavelengths of light that we use in our devices at Red Light Rising. And the reason we use these two different wavelengths of light is because they've been shown in thousands and thousands of studies now to be able to penetrate the body up to a depth of about 5 centimeters, okay? So 5 centimeters into your body, you're going into your bones, into your blood, through your skull, into your brain, into all your organs, into all your muscles. And that's quite an important thing to bear in mind. So when the light penetrates the body, when it penetrates the cells of the body, a curious thing happens. And that is that the cells of the body absorb this light. This is some of the very few wavelengths of light that our body is able to absorb directly into the cells. And when it does that, two very important things happen. The first thing that happens is an increase in cellular energy production. So the light penetrates the cells of the body. It causes some kind of a chemical change in the energy production process within the cells, and enables the cell to produce more energy at that time, and actually for quite a considerable amount of time afterwards. So when you think about it, when the cell has more energy, the tissue has more energy, and then whatever that tissue is, whether it's liver or muscles or bone or the brain, whatever that is, it's all made of cells. They all create their own energy. So when they create more energy, they do their jobs better and with more efficiency. Okay, so this is the reason why muscles get bigger and stronger with red light therapy. That's why athletes experience a gain in strength with red light therapy. It's why wounds can heal a lot faster with red light therapy, because whatever the job is of the tissue, it's doing it better and more efficiently because it has more energy with more or less the same input, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second major benefit of red light therapy, again, it penetrates the body, penetrates the cells. It causes the cells a very, very transient and a very brief micro stress inside the cell, and causes the cell to react by releasing its own endogenous natural anti-inflammatory enzymes and proteins. And then these natural anti-inflammatories get released by the cell, they go into the blood, and then these anti-inflammatories circulate around the body and contribute to decreasing inflammation wherever we might find it. These are two very, very important things: more energy, more anti-inflammatories. That's why everything has the massive, massive potential of getting better.
And why is it that it's red and not blue and green? What's the difference?
Blue and green are useful to the body, but they don't cause this energy stimulation that red light does.
Okay.
You know, so blue and green tends to be reflected a lot by the skin. Red light penetrates about 5 millimeters into the skin, and then infrared light penetrates 5 centimeters into the skin. whereas blue and green get reflected or absorbed in a very, very top layer of the skin. Blue and green light, if managed in the proper way and with the proper guidance, can be beneficial. It's been shown to destroy bacteria on the skin. Mm-hmm. So it can help people that have some kind of a skin infection or acne, where it can contribute to killing the bacteria that's causing it. But it's unlike red light. Red light is not harmful for the body at all, but too much blue and green light is, for a number of reasons. There's actually a condition now that I noticed a few weeks ago. There's a condition called like screen face or device face or something.
Okay.
And because we're all staring at our cell phones for, you know, way too much time on a daily basis, the blue and green light that comes out of our cell phones is damaging our skin and prematurely aging it.
Oh, wow.
So what I'm saying is that you can use blue light briefly to kill some bacteria, but then you have to use red light therapy afterwards to help the skin cells repair from the blue damage, because it is damaging. So in the context of the cell phone, the blue light that, you know, we're, you know, innocently staring at our cell phones, doing what we want to do, but that blue light is damaging to the skin cells and causing like a graying of the skin and premature aging and wrinkling on the skin.
You're scaring me now, because I've got two big monitors in front of me and a laptop, and I normally spend about 8 to 10 hours a day in the office, indoors, in England, where there's no blinking sunlight anyway. I rarely get out in the winter. So, oh, wow. Okay, so that's interesting. So I've not heard that before, so that sounds quite recent-ish. Yeah. Okay, so how do you combat that then? So I guess one is you could have a red light box, but can you do something with the screens? Because I know if you wear the glasses, that's obviously going to protect your eyes, but you're not protecting all this skin, are you? So monitors now that people are making, like red light monitors and stuff like that?
Yeah, so I'm not necessarily aware of people making red light monitors. So here's the problem. If you're a graphic designer or some kind of other visual creator, like you can't put filters on your screen and put your blue light blocking glasses on, because then the screen is all red. But if you're just doing emails, you know, day in and day out, then there's no reason why you need full colors and beautiful, you know, HD on your computer screen. So everybody, there's a little bit of nuance to what everyone's doing, you know. Yes. So it's, you know, my mission is to try and educate people on what the effects are and what the workarounds are, and then the people have to decide which is going to actually work for them. So in your context there, you hit on a number of things there. You're indoors all day. It's winter. There's not much natural light. And you're staring at giant monitors for a massive part of your day. If you're not doing graphic work, get some software. There's free software that you can download onto your computer and your phone. Yeah. That'll automatically adjust the color of the screen. So as you move closer to sunset, it'll start to fade down the blue and green light and pick up the orange and red light. So that, you know, by sunset time, your screen is actually quite orange, if not red. So it's not emitting all that harmful blue and green light. You can sort out your overhead lighting. You can, you know, take out the intense LEDs that you might have. You can replace them with more soft yellow and orange lights. You could even, like you say, grab a red light therapy device and have very, very bright red light in your environment. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily going to stop the blue and green from damaging your face and your eyes and your brain, but it's going to at least balance it. So your body is going to be more, you know, because the sunlight, although it is very, very bright and white, as it were, it's actually made up of all the colors of the rainbow.
Right.
So your skin and your eyes are perceiving all those colors. You might not see them physically, but your body is perceiving them, and it knows, okay, well, this is daylight. I've evolved for millions of years with this daylight. But then in the context of the computer screens, it's just very, very high blue and green and much, much lower of the other colors. So this is what causes the fatigue in the eyes and in the brain, is because it's all this intense blue and green light. And then the blue blockers as well that you mentioned, you know, you can obviously protect your eyes. There is a nuanced way to use the blue blockers to full effect. But yes, you can then protect your eyes. You could, I mean, without sounding crazy, you could wear a mask, you know, wear something to cover up your skin. Yeah.
Wow.
Cover up your skin. There's a lot you can do. It just depends how deep you want to go into it.
My girlfriend already thinks I'm a bit crazy. So I think if I start wearing a mask in the office, because I just a very, very quick divert off. I just recently became obsessed with chewing and all the benefits, because we're not chewing properly. We eat baby food all the time. I know you're on like a carnivore diet, I think, when I see on your Instagram. So you probably don't have this problem. But because we're all eating baby food all the time, smoothies and soups, we don't use these muscles and we carry a lot of tension here. And also, if we don't use it, our airways start to close up. So I'm saying, oh, that's another thing I've got to worry about. So now I can add the mask to that as well. Let me ask you this. Yeah. So I've got these. Now these are DeWalt. So I got these from, you probably can't see there. I got these from Amazon, and they're very, very red. So I wear these at night. But do you reckon they're doing anything? Because they're not proper night blockers. Or do you reckon, because I can't see anything. They're designed for people that use some sort of lasers.
Laser light.
So I stick these on at night when I'm watching TV. They're not the sexiest glasses in the world, but they do. They do.
They're also not the ugliest. I will say that they're not the ugliest. I've seen some brands that are horrendous.
Yeah.
But that's more than likely to work. You know, look. You know, without looking into the actual quality of the plastic that they're using there, the key is with blue blocking technology and blue blocking glasses is it has to be, the lenses have to be colored. You know, there's a lot of companies now that are advertising these blue blockers, but they call them, you know, they're quite smart. They call them computer glasses, but they're clear lenses, you know,
so they're
more appropriate to use in the office. Now, these aren't blocking blue and green light. They're blocking they're blocking violet light, which is completely, a completely different beast, and maybe a tiny, tiny bit of blue light. So you might experience a sensation of less fatigue in the eyes and the brain during the day, but these are not blue light blocking glasses. For anyone out there listening, whether you're buying from Red Light Rising or whatever other company you decide to go for, they have to be at the very least yellow lenses. And then all the way from the yellow into the oranges down to the deep red, like what you've just showed me, is what you have to get to block. It's a physics. You can't make a clear lens that's going to block blue light. Not yet, anyway. It has to be, you know, so when you put on those red lenses, the only light that comes through is red light, because everything else gets reflected and blocked by those lenses. So on the surface, those look like a great pair for you to use for blue blocking. And are you sleep tracking at all? Do you monitor that?
I'm not, no. So what would you recommend as a good sleep track? I know Aura's out there. Would you recommend that or something different?
I've been using Aura for a very, very long time. I've been having a lot of issues with it lately, unfortunately, which breaks my heart to say. It's, you know, often doesn't actually track my sleep. I wake up the next morning and it's just blank. I've had some charging issues with it. They're great customer service, but I'm also now currently testing the Whoop strap.
I've heard of this one.
Which I'm really enjoying. I'm obviously using them both together now to see the numbers. And I prefer the Whoop strap because I am, you know, a massive focus for me is exercise. The Aura ring, there is data that you can kind of, you know, you have to kind of number crunch it yourself to figure it out. But I, at the moment I'm preferring Whoop strap, but it depends. You know, if you're just an office worker, a ring might be enough, but this is very convenient if you're lifting barbells or rocks or, you know, running around in the forest like I do sometimes.
Yeah.
It's convenient. So.
Whoop strap. Okay, I'll have a look.
Biostrap. There's a lot of decent ones.
You're one of several people that have mentioned that one to me now, so I think I need to. Have you had the where you've said, right, I'm not going to wear my glasses today, or I've spent a bit of time in blue light, then you've done the red light. Have you seen a difference in your sleep patterns? Or you're probably so red light upped anyway, it probably doesn't really affect you that much.
I'm a little bit. You know, I'm a little bit of a rare case because I do build my entire lifestyle around my health habits. You know, so let me just think. Have I been exposed to blue light? I mean, look, it's been so long, and I usually end off every evening at least the last 15 minutes before bed just in red light. You know, so just that short amount of time in not necessarily using the therapy on my body, but using the red light to light up the entire room, which has massive effect on relaxation and, you know, allowing your brain to go into sleep. But the reverse is certainly true. You know, if for whatever reason I'm socializing at night and I don't have my blue blockers and I'm, you know, unfortunately 99% of public environments are horrendously lit with artificial light, I can see the numbers on my sleep.
Okay.
My sleep is horrendous, you know? So that's why I recommend you do some sleep tracking, just for your own peace of mind, because if someone sells you some red light therapy or some blue blockers or whatever else, and you can't see the actual numbers, and sometimes it's like, man, am I being ripped off here?
What's it doing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, that makes sense. I'm quite obsessed with sleep. So again, so I do wear these at night, but I recently, this weekend just gone, got myself a weighted blanket. Beautiful. Oh my God. I've never used that before. And it's so comforting just to have that on as well. Just to have that extra little bit of weight on there. Mm. I don't know. It might not be good where you are, because it might be too hot for you, but it's something to try. If I put these on at night and I'm watching TV, but my feet are on the, you know, they're getting the blue light from the screen and my face is, so I guess you've got a lot of receptors in your eyes, but there's all receptors everywhere else. So they're limiting stuff, but they're not limiting everything, I guess. That'd be fair.
Yeah. The whole body is photoreceptive, right? So the whole body will react to light. And the most obvious example is go out in the sun, get a suntan or get sunburned. You know, that's the most obvious example, but there have been studies that have shown that, unfortunately, you know, the underside of this Whoop strap has got two very bright green LEDs. Now, green is not as damaging as blue light to the body, but there has been a rather small study that showed these tiny little, not particularly Whoop, I must admit, but showed that little green LEDs on sleep trackers can affect the melatonin production in the body, because the little green light shines on the skin and those few cells pick up that there's, you know, green light, which is part of sunlight, and it can slightly confuse the body. So, you know, in the context of watching TV, like if I am going to be in an environment where I don't have control of the light, I always wear a cap to stop the light from hitting my face. I'll dress up if I can. I put a hoodie on, I put long sleeves on, do whatever you can to, you know, protect stop the artificial light from hitting your skin, you know? So they're all different levels. Depends how crazy you want to go on it, but
yeah.
Yeah, you're quite right. The eyes are the number one thing, because that's the massive, you know, so just wearing the blue blockers and then watching TV in a t-shirt is much, much better than, you know, wearing all the clothes but no blue blockers, so all the light's going into your eyes.
I was listening to a Paul Check podcast. I don't know if you know Paul Check or you've heard of his podcast but it was only just something I was just listening offhand while I was doing something, and he said that they do these sleep studies and they shine a laser pen on the toe of the people in the absolute dark room and they wake up 100% of the time. And I should have listened to more, but I was thinking, well, hang on a second, isn't a laser pen red? So why would a red laser pen on the toe wake somebody up? Or is it just the stimulation of light in general? I don't know if you know anything about that.
I haven't heard about that experiment, and it would be very interesting to know what color the light is. I'm not sure. I mean, you know, if it's a red laser, it'll be very confusing. If it was a blue laser, it would be completely understandable.
Maybe it was a blue laser. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's sometimes it's bizarre. You know, sometimes I'll read these studies on, you know, they call them photobiomodulation or LED light therapy. And it'll be a study about light and it'll just say LED light therapy, fantastic for XYZ. And you go, you're looking at the study, you go, which color? You're not telling us which color LED. This is massive, massively important.
Yeah.
And these studies will just say LED light therapy. And, you know, it's obviously very few and far between, because it's a major error. You can't, it's like saying exercise makes the bicep bigger. Well, which exercise?
Which exercise,
you know, we need to know. So, I mean, that's, I'll, if you can send me the link for that study.
I will do.
I'd love to listen to it.
Yeah.
But color is very important with light. Very, very important.
So just moving away from proper red light devices for a second, in my bathroom, I've installed just a standard household red bulb, because I'm thinking, well, that's not going to stimulate me at night. So I can go to the toilet, I can put the red light on. We've also got one in the lounge. Are they giving me any benefits, or are they just not hurting me?
Yeah, no, they're not. They actually are hurting you slightly as well.
Okay.
They're much, much better than white or blue LEDs, you know, so that's a fantastic step in the right direction. But depending on the light bulb, they're more than often than not. I mean, with the red LED household lights that I've seen anyway, the LEDs themselves aren't actually red. There's just a red screen, or, you know, like a red dye. I've got one in my, I can't show you now, but it's just a red bulb. A red plastic bulb with a white LED inside. So although it does cast a reddish hue over the room, I can still sense the yellow light at the very least. And I can sense, it feels to me like there is some white light coming through as well. And it's also flickering. You know, these light bulbs flicker at a very, very fast rate that you can't perceive with the eye, But this flickering can, all, for some people, can be very, very intense and very, very damaging to the eye. So it's definitely a step in the right direction. It's not going to give you any of the red light therapy benefits, of course, because it has to be far more powerful. And with proper red light therapy, they're actually LEDs that are programmed to emit only red light. So they don't emit the whole spectrum and filter everything out, and then you see red light. They actually only emit red light with none of the other colors. So yeah, it's definitely a step in the right direction for you. Something better would be to have them in, you know, I'm not sure what your bathroom situation is, to have them, you know, low level on the ground, so it's not overhead.
Okay.
Have some kind of a shade over it if possible, just to kind of diffuse a little bit more. Mm. But it's a great idea and a great step in the right direction for sure.
Yeah, I have heard about some of these, some of these cheaper light bulbs. Even during the day when you've got them on white, they're emitting some harmful frequencies now on top of the fact that it's a blue light bulb. And I've noticed with the one in the bathroom, which is a very cheap one with a little remote control, you're right, I never thought about that, but I can sense white light, which is such a weird thing to say. But the one in the lounge, which is a bit more expensive, and you select which color it's going to be on your phone, that feels a lot darker and richer red. Mm. So I think I'm going to get rid of the one. That's interesting. What about candles? Is there some red light benefit that you get from candlelight? I've heard some.
Not in terms of the therapy itself, again, but in terms of the candles are actually better than those light bulbs you've just mentioned, because that is natural. Mm-hmm. You know, your eyes and your brain have evolved with millions of years with that particular type of fire. You know, there's only red, the orange and red light coming out of the candles, and a little bit of infrared light. So those are actually ideal, you know. So, you know, if I'm ever in discussion with someone about how to hack their light environment, you know, if you're the kind of person that likes the candles, then get, you know, good, healthy candles all over your place. That it's that flicker of the candles, that gentle flicker, the orange and red hues, that just hits your brain and tells you, ah, man, it's time to relax. You know, how relaxing is it? Anybody will admit to this. How relaxing. You walk into a room and it's candle lit, instantly you relax. Everybody loves it. And it's because our brains have evolved for millions of years with fire.
Yeah.
So absolutely, you know, in a safe way, don't burn your house down. Mm-hmm. You know, candles all over the place for sure.
Yeah. It's a shame because in England, there's not a lot of gas fires or fireplaces left now in these modern houses. And I used to love that as a kid. We'd just put the fire on at night and, you know, you could have all the lights off and you just have the, I remember there was a few times we had power cuts, so we had no TV and we'd just all be around the gas fire and it was just lovely, this lovely orange color coming out. Okay.
Exactly.
So what about the benefits of grounding and red light therapy? If you put those two together, so if we talk about your device first, are there any benefits there if I was grounded and, so let's say I had a grounded mouse mat or grounded pad on the floor, would that help enhance the benefits of your tech?
Yeah, it certainly would. And because, and everything that we're doing, you know, when we talk about, whether we're talking about the candlelight or the red light or the, you know, the red light therapy or the ambient light or the grounding, all we're doing here, and this is an important point for people that are new to the idea of biohacking, is that we're mimicking the natural state of being. Okay, so the most natural state of being, which is difficult for a lot of us in the modern world, is to be barefoot outside on the earth, you know, during the day. So that's what we're mimicking with red light therapy. So in the context of what you're talking about, I would say doing red light therapy at sunrise while standing on your grounding mat is amazing, because your body is then, you know, doesn't think that it's outside, but on a biological level, it's registering that this is a very, very natural environment being the red light therapy. Not only are you charging your cells up, but you're also telling your brain that it's sunrise. Okay. And then the grounding, the electron and proton exchange that you're getting through the ground and is telling your body, oh, I must be connected to the earth, which is, you know, my home where I've evolved for millions of years. So there would be a fantastic benefit to that. And to really round that off, I would then say to you, get some very, very bright light after that. Because if you think about it, if you're a hunter gatherer and you've woken up at sunrise in the forest and you're starting your day, you'll be outside on the ground, grounding, getting the red light of the sunrise as it's coming up, and you're very likely to still be outside when the bright sunrise finally does arrive. So in that order, you know, the red and then the bright light is like, it's a very strong signal to your brain that it's indeed daytime. And that is incredibly important, especially in the dark northern hemisphere during winter.
Okay, now that's cool. Again, this is something I've only really discovered this year, because in the past people said, oh, you should be barefoot while the sun's going down. It's like, yeah, that sounds like proper hippie stuff. And then Now you start to hear about the science behind it. You think, these people knew years ago. And like, and because I speak to people like yourself a lot, I get into a bit of an echo chamber where I think everybody knows this sort of stuff, but they really don't. And I kind of caught myself in my third eye the other day, because I was outside drinking my turmeric coffee, barefoot on the ground, getting a bit of sunlight. And I was thinking, oh my God, if my neighbors are watching me, then just think what an idiot this guy is. But then people just don't know the benefits of all this stuff. It's quite sad, really. Obviously that's the sort of work you're doing now. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it is crazy, you know, and, you know, when I visit my friends and family in South Africa, I always have a new thing, you know, blue blockers and this and that and whatever crazy thing I'm into now. But it's because I keep learning. And I keep realizing, that's important. Now I'm taking regular Epsom salt baths followed by cold showers. And then the next day I'll take an ice bath. And, you know, to people outside of our circles, it's like, what are you doing, man? Are you insane?
Yeah.
But, you know, in my experience, most often the people that are outside of our circles are sick, you know, and they're looking at us and they're going, oh my God, you only eat this and you don't eat that. And you take ice baths. Whoa, what's wrong with you? But everyone I'm surrounded by is sick. So it's like, well, you know, all these small things that we do, that I do, and then people like yourself do it, it makes a massive difference, man. When you come to pay your health bill at the end of your life, we add up all those things, all those weird practices you did. And then, you know, we see where you are at the end of it all, you know?
Yeah, I grew up in a lifestyle where, you know, it's nice to have a glass of wine at night and, you know, have some snacks. And now I've learned that, you know, I need a good 3 hours of no food before bed, at least 3 hours. I sleep better on 4 hours where I fasted. And alcohol just ruins my sleep. So it's like, even last night, it's a winter's night. I'd love a glass of wine. It's like, but I really want to get a good night's sleep. And now that takes precedent over that short feeling of having that glass of wine and some crisps or something. So unfortunately, sometimes when you take that matrix, is it the blue pill? I always forget which pill it is. And you learn, oh God, well, you know, you watch it on TV, you just see people at night having dinner and having wine and people having coffee at night. I know coffee doesn't affect all people, but I can't have a coffee past 12 p.m. lunchtime. That's going to destroy my sleep. And yet you're watching a really popular TV show or film and people are, you know, having espressos after their dinner. And I just thought that was normal because that's what we grow up with, isn't it? In the pop culture, we see all these weird things, people eating bread all the time and all that. Anyway, so it's a bit of a rant, but you said something a minute ago and you made me think about, there's a podcaster, an anthropologist called Chris Ryan, and his podcast is called Tangentially Speaking. It's one of my favorite podcasts. He's been on Joe Rogan several times. Mm-hmm. And he asked the question on there a couple of years ago, which is, what is cute? And he was saying, why do we find things cute? So why do we find like a puppy cute? What evolutionary benefit is there of cute? And it just really got me thinking. And I think he said the same thing about beauty. Why do we find things beautiful? And again, there's all those reasons. And so I then started asking myself the question, why do we find sunsets beautiful? And I think you can probably give the answer, but there's in us, isn't it? So, let's go and watch the sunset. All day we don't give a crap about the sun. It's there all day, but we'll go out at night. And actually, I worked in Cape Town a couple of times, and we'd go to the top of, Table Mountain, then there's another one. What are the other two mountains in Cape Town?
Lion's Head, I think.
I think it was Lion's Head. So I went up Lion's Head for sunset. Beautiful. I had to climb back down in the dark. I was a bit scared, but everybody was doing it. We went up Lion's Head. We watched the sunset and there were, I don't know, maybe 100 people all doing the same thing. And we're all touching the rock. And we're all staring at the sun go down. It's a beautiful thing. But probably none of us are thinking, I've got some red light therapy. This was like 3-4 years ago. Do you have any thoughts on why we find the sunset so beautiful? Is it red light or is there something else maybe?
Yeah, I think it's probably a lot to do with the red light. You know, it's because, you know, in the same context as a fire, most humans, I've never come across someone who goes, sitting in front of a fire, don't really care. You know, most of us will enjoy candlelight, we'll enjoy a fire. We actually get mesmerized. That's quite a common, you know, phrase that people share, is that like, oh man, I could stare into the fire for hours. Mm. And it's because it goes back millions of years, you know, deep in our brains, in our DNA. This is such a part of us, this fire, this color. It meant safety, it meant warmth, it meant survival. And I think it's the same for the sunset, you know. It's the same colors, it's the same infrared light that we're receiving, and it's the same signals. You know, you've survived another day. Presumably, you know, when the sunset was happening, you know, millions of years ago, it was the time to retreat back to camp, back to safety, back to not comfort, I suppose, in a different sense that we know it today. And then you would go back to the fire, and that's when the community starts, and you could share the stories of the day and share some experience and connect with your community before having a sleep, you know. So I think it's something deep in our genes, in our DNA, that just reminds us, you know. It's the same with running water. Most people love the sound of running water. You know, you think about those little Zen gardens you can buy at B&Q. You can put in your lounge with a little thing that flips over with a little stream of running water, or a fish tank, or a waterfall, or the beach, or, you know, an actual river. Something about the sound of running water hits us deeply in our DNA, that most people love it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the only way I can explain that, I guess, is it's just part of our evolution.
Yeah. When you are, for example, standing in the ocean, watching the sunset, that's like a double whammy of good, isn't it? Because you're grounded into the water, the sun's coming down, you've got the waves. That is probably the ultimate for me anyway. Yeah. That's the great sunset.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed.
So being in Britain, where we get no good weather, we get like 3 good days a year. It's so depressing. Is there any benefit of still being in clouds, in cloud light, or not really?
Yeah, there is. I mean, it's still very good for your circadian rhythm. You know, even on a cloudy day, sunlight is thousands of times brighter than any household light. So, you know, you might not perceive that warmth. You might not perceive the sunrise or the sunset, but that bright light is almost impossible to replicate in a regular household, unless you specifically have a white light device, which, you know, that it has, they have to be massive. Mm. Well, not, I suppose not too massive, but they have to be specifically to replicate the sun. So yeah, even on a cloudy day, you're still going to get some UV. It's not going to be a great UV balance, but it's still important for you. You'll get probably a lot of the colors of the spectrum. They just won't be as attractive, you know, the sunrise and sunset in that context. But yeah, the brightness of the light on a cloudy day is still very,
still
very important.
Worth getting it.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, you know, especially for the circadian rhythm benefits, 100%.
Okay, here's a question for you. Is moonlight blue light, or is it filtered somehow?
It is blue light. It's sunlight, really, because it's reflected bouncing from the sun. Yeah. But it's very, 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 very weak by the time it hits the earth. So it's not considered to be disruptive to the circadian rhythm.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because I always think sometimes the moon's quite bright, and I'm thinking, is this doing something to me? But yeah, maybe because it's so far away and it's had to bounce.
Yeah, it's weaker. I mean, sometimes I do have trouble sleeping on a full moon, but that's not necessarily because I've actually seen the moon or been outside. You know, I've noticed that over the years, where like suddenly I'll have a terrible 3 or 4 nights sleep, and I'm like, what the hell? Like nothing's changed. And then, you know, I don't necessarily follow the lunar cycles, but then someone will say to me, oh, it's full moon. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
It does happen every now and then. But as far as I know, I've actually just finished a book called Chasing the Sun by Linda Geddes or Geddes. I'm not sure. She's a British researcher. Mm-hmm. And in that book, she says moonlight is not bright enough to affect the circadian rhythm.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Thank you. That's a good answer to that. With me then, so I know you've already answered this question a few minutes ago, but I have two ailments in my body. One is I get carpal tunnel. I don't know if it's called something different in South Africa, but I get terrible shooting pains up here, and it's kind of stopped at the minute. So I was thinking, and I haven't done any red light therapy yet. I don't know if it was yourself that was with Tim Gray a couple of years ago in London. There was a red light therapy stand there. I can't remember who it was now. I didn't get a chance to go to that.
I
thought it was you guys. But yeah, there was a big crowd and I never got a chance. And again, I was like, what is this red light? That makes no sense. But now I obviously know. So I'm thinking there might be some benefits there. And the other one is I've been getting spasms in my back for a couple of years, just in one certain spot. So part of me's thinking, I'm really wanting to see if I did, I don't know, a month or a couple of months of red light therapy, would that maybe have some impact there? But I guess you're going to say, you know, it can do, but I don't know if you know any more about those particular things.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the one thing I also say to people is when they say like, hey, can red light therapy solve my problem? You know, the first thing I say is, well, you have to remove what's causing the problem first. Mm. You have to take the stone out of your shoe. Mm. You know, so what you've just shown me there with your hand, that suggests to me it might have something to do with mouse clicking or computer work. You know, if you think that's accurate, then I would suggest, you know, I don't know if you've got ergonomic mouse or ergonomic standing desk, things like that. There's, red light therapy will help relieve the symptoms and will help speed up the healing, but it won't cancel out what's causing you the problem. Do you know what I mean? So if you keep inputting the problem's going to be there, but you can keep putting the band-aid of red light therapy on top of it. But until you remove that problem, you're going to be in the same loop, unfortunately.
Makes sense.
And then for the spasm for the back, you know, it would need a bit of diagnosis from a qualified physio, some kind of a movement specialist to see maybe your posture is not right or there's a spinal problem. But something that I would recommend to you is maybe acupuncture or dry needling, which will first of all relieve the spasming in the muscle, you know, because from what I understand, when the muscles spasm, it's the nerves that are constantly firing that just keep the muscle like that. So, you know, the dry needling works amazing for me and releases the spasm. And then the red light therapy will then further relieve any pain. It'll relax the muscle, increase the blood flow, and just, again, assist with the healing, assist with the progression of the healing. But it's always important to investigate and remove whatever is causing the problem.
Yeah. Okay, no, thank you for that. And I had some, not needling, but I had some acupuncture and it just made it go mental, but maybe I needed to persist with that. So I think there's more to it. But yeah, I've got a standing desk here, which I know you can't see. I've got a really nice mouse. So I've tried to make those changes, but I spent 15 years on the little laptop doing that, and that's knackered my shoulders and everything. So I'm just trying to spend time opening it up now.
Posture correction, exactly.
Posture correct, yeah, massive. And after I finished David Goggins' book in July, I'll try and stretch an hour a day now because I wasn't stretching. I'm so, you know, I don't know, maybe in 5 years I'll be able to put my arms behind my head, but at the minute I'm just so tired.
Wow.
It's not good. This one's a bit more out there as a question, but I interviewed Troy Casey. He's a certified health nut and he likes to get sunlight on his special area. So do you know people that do that? Have you tried that? Are there any benefits? I know there's stuff to do with testosterone and maybe reproduction benefits. Is there some benefits there with your box?
100%. Oh, so in the context of red light therapy, definitely. There are some, you know, not many, but there are a handful of studies that have shown red light only is very, very good for testosterone production in the testes in men and also for fertility in men. And then red and infrared light is very good for the female reproductive organs for the equivalent hormonal benefits, but from the female perspective. For men, I always say do not use near infrared light on your balls because that has been shown to have negative effects on the testicles. So whenever guys are reaching out and they want testosterone enhancement with red light therapy, it has to be red light only. Now, all of our products, besides the small spotlight, all the products can be toggled between the two wavelengths. So you can use our lights for focusing on the testicles for the testosterone benefits. But UV is also very, very beneficial for testosterone production in the testicles. And the theory and the understanding at the moment is that if it's good for testosterone, it's usually good for fertility as well, because the two are so closely linked. So I forget... in the context of the studies that I've read about, you know, sun exposing the testicles to sun is really, really good for fertility and good for testosterone. So it's something I do actually quite regularly if I remember to do it. I get my morning sun every single day, and if I can, I just pull my shorts to the side a little bit, depending on who's around or where I am. But it's something that I, you know, when I have done, I've you know, recently been living in Latin America with amazing sunshine. Like I would spend a good portion of the day naked, walking around in the sun naked, you know, in the privacy of my own home, because getting that sun, you know, on the parts of your body that don't get sun, you know, the upper thighs and the testicles and the bum and all that, like it feels amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and there is the testosterone benefits for sure.
Yeah. No, that's really cool. Okay. What are the benefits with infrared sauna? Is that similar to what your devices are, or is it a completely different wavelengths that are generating the heat?
Exactly. It's a completely different wavelength. It's very, very beneficial. I think so far on paper, red light therapy is more beneficial. But that's not, you know, if you can have both, definitely have both. You know, I use both. I use red light therapy and saunas. I use red light therapy every day and saunas, you know, a couple of times a week if I can get to a sauna location. But yeah, infrared saunas are a completely different beast. They use far infrared light. So near infrared light and far infrared light are both invisible, but they're on completely opposite ends of the infrared light spectrum. And the far infrared light in the sauna is penetrating your body, the same thing, but it's heating up the water in and around your cells, causing the heat of the body to build up from the inside and therefore make you sweat. And then only once the body has got to those very high temperatures, then do all the benefits of the infrared sauna start to kick in, which compared to the red light therapy is it's creating an energy production and an anti-inflammatory effect in the body, you know. So they're quite different. Both are very beneficial. As far as I'm aware right now, the consensus is that red light therapy is more beneficial, but saunas are still amazing and I do recommend them.
Yeah, I love it. I love saunas. I'm not a massive fan of the infrared saunas. I don't know why, but I've always loved just the proper sweat boxes. You know, just that. And COVID has just destroyed that for me because the gym's closed and I'm like, oh, I need, need a sauna. when we get sunlight through the window, especially now we've got like these nice modern double glazed windows, am I getting any benefit or is that filtering it all out?
Nah, you're getting, depending on the type of glass, you know, like you said, there's so many different types of glass now. So it does, it tends to filter out a lot of the UVB, which is very, very important for vitamin D production, but it lets in a lot of the UVA, which is very, very damaging. So again, it's about, you know, getting sunlight, getting a decent amount of sunlight every day is good if it's direct from the sun and it's in the natural wavelengths that your body is adapted to receive. So when you're sitting in your conservatory and you're getting sunlight through the glass, it feels lovely, don't get me wrong, on a winter's day, but you're getting, you know, an unbalanced amount of light. So we don't know what you're getting, but you're getting far less of one thing because you're not going to, probably not going to sunburn through your conservatory. So that's, we immediately know you're not getting any UVB there. But you're probably getting a lot of UVA and, you know, maybe far less of one color, far more of the other color. So yeah, it's not worth incorporating into your practice because it's unbalanced.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those things that I just think people don't know that because they go, oh, got this lovely sunlight coming in. I'm getting all this, but actually, no, you're filtering out some of the good stuff. Again,
It's probably good in the context of circadian rhythm, you know, like everything we're talking about is slightly nuanced, you know, so it's not like set in stone. So in the context of the circadian rhythm, you're still getting bright light. So that's definitely something that's working. So you're waking up your brain, you're getting bright light and then things are going on there. But, you know, vitamin D production is probably seriously suffering.
Wow. And what about... if you are using suntan creams, is that causing us problems? Are they good and bad suntan creams, or do you try and stay away from them? What are your thoughts there?
Personally, I don't use any of them at all, unless, you know, unless I'm going surfing in the middle of the day with the harshest light. I've got, you know, bald head, so then I reluctantly will put sun cream on my head because I just don't want to get sunburnt. And I will use a zinc based and the most natural I can find. You know, I don't use any of the high street brands because they're just full of chemicals. So before using sunscreen, I would really, you know, I'd rather cover up. I'd rather get out of the sun. You know, our skin absorbs so much of those chemicals and it's this greasy, horrible. And you look at the ingredients and it sounds like a, you know, it sounds like something from Breaking Bad. I do know that there are a bunch of natural brands out there, but I can't comment on them because I haven't used sunscreen in a very, very, very long time. So I don't actually keep up with what's happening in the sunscreen, but it should be, in my opinion, absolute last resort. You know, if you know you're going to be hiking in the desert for a good 10 hours and you can't cover up, then maybe use the sunscreen. It's better than getting sunburned. But I personally avoid it as much as I can.
Yeah. There was a podcast with Mark Sisson on Joe Rogan back in about 2016. And again, this was like brand new information to me, but he was saying, you know, sometimes it's better to get burnt than to put suntan cream on. I was like, what? And I probably butchered what he said there, but he's like, we don't have a problem with getting too much sun. The problem we have, most of us, is we're not getting enough sun. So don't worry about getting too much, try and get some. And again, that was a proper game changer for me.
You know, so like in my context, he's right there in an office worker context, right? So if you're an office worker and you're like, you go out for some sun on a Saturday and you're covering in sunscreen, that's like, oh, don't bother, man. You know, you need the sun. But with me, I'm in the sun every day. So I can't get sunburned every day, or I can't get too much sun every day, because then you start to get into the DNA damage and then eventually the skin cancer, you know? So yeah,
balance, nuanced, isn't it? Like you said. Yeah. And when it comes to you staring, I'm assuming, do you stare at the sunset? Do you don't look at it directly?
I don't stare at it. I look in the direction of the sun to make sure that my eyes are receiving all those colors, and you know, and there's also the pleasure and the community side of it. Mm. But yeah, there's definitely a sun gazing practice that's making the rounds. Mm. But you've got to start very, very slow. And there's actually like this method where you kind of, on your first day, you stare a certain distance away from the sun, and then you start to slowly turn your gaze more towards the sun as your eyes get more accustomed to it. But staring directly into the sun is, I don't think it's necessary. I think it's dangerous. You know, as long as you are allowing the light to enter your eyes, you know, not hiding your face from the sun, and just, you know, looking in the direction of the sun for a good portion of your sun gazing adventures.
What I like to do, and this just feels very natural to me, is I'll look in the direction. Again, it's England. It's probably not that powerful. It's also November, December. But what I'll do is, like, when the sun does come out, I'll look in that general direction, but I'll also close my eyes, and I just get this lovely red glow here. So I guess there's still stuff going in at that point, isn't there? It's just going through the very thin skin here.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, there'll be some light waves entering your eyes. You know, I mean, most light waves will penetrate skin. To a degree, and the eyelids are very, very thin, as you say. So that's lovely. You can do that. Nothing wrong with that. And then, you know, just opening your eyes and just kind of gazing away, you know, like letting the light directly penetrate the eyes is definitely worth it, especially in the winter, you know, when you need those strong, powerful markers, you know, because, you know, a quick explanation. Circadian rhythm is, you know, it's roughly divided into 12 and 12, more or less, right? So it works on two of the main drivers of circadian rhythm is light and food. That's how our body gets the signals to do what it's supposed to do at that certain time. And everything happens in sequence. So your first signal, really, let's just say it this way. Your first signal is waking up and then getting the red light of the sunrise and then the bright light of the sun. That sets the starting point of the circadian rhythm. And that's the morning. So then all the daytime processes kick in your brains and then kicks in the rest of your organs. Mm-hmm. And then it starts to count down roughly, you know, 12 hours. It's obviously, we need to discuss more about time zones and all that. But then it counts down 12 hours to when it's expecting sunset, because the body runs on clocks. It runs on a continuous counting system. So it's from the sunrise, it then starts to immediately count down to when it's expecting sunset. And that's when you have another red light therapy session around your sunset to mimic the colors of the sun. Yeah. And then after that, you want the blue blocking and the candles and the, you know, to eliminate all the artificial light, because that's the end marker. Or it's not necessarily the end, but it's another point of reference for the circadian rhythm is that evening session. And then all the evening processes kick in. The melatonin production kicks in the brain, which then goes into the blood and then sends the message to all the other organs. It's nighttime. I will be asleep soon. And then all the healing and recovery can start. And then that's another countdown until the morning and then the sunrise. And that's why it's important for us to, you know, to try and make habits of waking up at the same time, going to sleep at the same time, eating breakfast at the same time, eating the last meal at the same time, exercising at the same time, because everything's on a clock, you know? So in an ideal world, you know, as boring and as non-spontaneous as it sounds, that's the ultimate key to health, is that everything has to happen at the same time all the time. Mm-hmm. And then your body gets into the habit, it gets into the groove, and it gets a lot more efficient at doing what it's supposed to do.
Very cool. Thank you for explaining that. Do you take any supplements for bed? Because I've started recently taking a bit of zinc before bed. Are you taking any? No.
I don't really. One of the main reasons I don't is because I do spend a massive part of my time in Latin America, which means I inevitably run out of supplements, and then they can be very difficult to get hold of in this country. So I just, I try not to build a reliance on that. Mm. But I do have some magnesium. I always, you know, magnesium is something that's very easy to get hold of. You can, you know, you can buy it straight from a chemical lab. You can get food grade magnesium to help with sleep and muscle recovery. So that's about the only thing I'm taking right now. sometimes I mess around with having a teaspoon of honey at night and, you know, just for fun, just for a little tasty treat, and it can seriously improve your sleep.
Yeah.
Besides that, you know, I eat a very high protein, high fat diet. I eat a lot of liver, so I'm getting hopefully most of my nutrients from there. So outside of that, no supplements for me.
Cool. Last question for you. I'm glad I remembered this one. I was listening now that people have learned about light and how important it is to get that full spectrum, because we're kind of getting isolated harmful rays and stuff. I heard something a little while ago that a lot of our food is being grown either in a greenhouse and stuff's been filtered, or worse, there's these indoor places where they grow lettuce, let's say, and they just have blue light on there. In the natural world, we might eat something from a field that's had all that lovely light over it, but now we're eating this stuff that's only had blue light. So we're ingesting only the. Do you know anything about that?
I don't really. I haven't read anything about that recently. Mostly, I guess, because I've kind of, you know, my focus has shifted slightly from diet because I don't eat any plants, so I'm not really looking into it that much. It makes sense. Makes perfect sense to me. You know, I am very surprised to hear that they're using only blue light, because I know that, you know, the grow operations that are growing food indoors are also using UV light, because I think UV is very important for plants too. So that is very surprising to hear, but it makes perfect sense, because, you know, something that dawned on me a long time ago, you know, like I said, I lived in the UK for a long time, and about, I guess, 20 years ago now, when the organic food started becoming available in supermarkets, you know, I remember, like, when the local co-op started offering organic food, it was like just organic cucumbers and just organic tomatoes. There was nothing else available. Mm-hmm. And the tomatoes were small and bruised and pockmarked. And, you know, then you looked at the conventional ones and they were big and giant and red. Yeah. And I remember thinking, like, the organic ones look so shit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what's the story here? But now you go into an organic supermarket and they're perfect, they're round, they're big, the beautiful colors, perfect, no blemishes. Now I'm thinking the other way. I'm like, how is this organic when it looks like it's been printed by a 3D printer? So yeah, I mean, if for those people out there that, you know, are interested in food science, when they look into the, like, mass food production, like, it's crazy what they can do, man. They can spray foods to make them redder or pinker or greener or longer or shorter. So it wouldn't surprise me if they can use certain kinds of light to, you know, that light, that blue light could stop bugs for all we know. You know, it might be to stop the bugs from eating it. But, you know, I just think, like, if you're buying organic produce and there's not one single pockmark on it, that means there's been no other life near it whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then, therefore, I then question, like, how organic is this? Because you can get an organic poison. You know,
so scary, isn't it? And Brian, I have loved talking to you, and that has been a proper education. So thank you so much. Where can people find you if they want to know more?
Yeah, they can find my business at redlightrising.co.uk. They can also find the Instagram page, if they're into that, is at redlightrising. And then on that, if they're interested in my own personal journey or my business partner as well, he's quite the specialist in some of the stuff as well. His name is James Strong. They can find both of the links to our profiles on our Red Light Rising page if they want to check out our personal stories too. James has got an incredible story that he loves sharing as well. So that's it.
Wonderful. Guys, thank you so much for watching. Take a deep breath. Brian, thanks again for being a guest. And we'll see you on the next episode. Cheers, everyone.
Absolute pleasure.
Cheers, Brian.